This episode of the Popcast is brought to you by these sponsors.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Popcast. This is a winner of the Polhem Prize. The Polhem Prize. He's one of Sweden's finest. He probably has a lot of IKEA furniture. That's okay, so do I. He's the creator of Curl. He treasures his wife and two kids. This is Daniel Stenberg. Welcome to the podcast, Daniel.
Hello. Thank you. Good to be here.
So, look, we're going to get into the Curl, everybody. Everybody, you know, but look, this journey gets to the Curl. Let's talk about your journey from beginning, the first time you started typing on a computer and says, I love this thing.
Well, I started in the, I would say, mid-80s when I found out about or learned about how Commodore 64 at that time.
Actually, had a friend. Time out. We have to talk about this. So again, it's almost like we have a drinking game on the podcast, because anybody who joins the podcast, it's always like, especially, you know, in our age demographic, it's always the same thing. It's you started on a Commodore 64. I'm not stopping on the Commodore 64. I want to know, was it games? Was it games you were trying to play on the Commodore 64? What were you doing on it?
I think maybe that got my initial interest, maybe when I sort of got my eyes open for the computer. But I pretty soon actually became interested in programming and, you know, making it do what I tell it to do, and sort of the wonders of I can actually tell it instructions and it will do what I tell it to do. And I figured that was fun and fascinating. So that got me hooked pretty soon.
Got it. And so, like, what were your early, like, you know, what were early coding things were you doing? Just making like lights or making sounds, or like, what were the things you were doing initially?
Well, at first, of course, they were very basic things, actually literally basic then, of course, on the Commodore 64, like programming basic. But pretty soon I also learned that people were doing, you know, games and things could fly across the screen and much more complicated and advanced than basic. So me and my best friend then, who also had a Commodore 64 at that time, we figured out, oh, they write things in assembly. So we got books and learned assembly and started to do things. Yes. So demos and games and music and all of that, actually, we got into. We had a lot of fun, spent a lot of time on that.
This is the drinking game. Anytime a Commodore 64 is mentioned on the podcast, you just got to take a shot. I don't know. Anyway, so moving on. So we pass the Commodore 64. We go and we're like, I love this and I want to do what? What happened then?
During that time, I got into the demo scene, as they call it. It was pretty big in Europe. A lot of people, you know, had these meetups when we had hundreds of people in the schools over a weekend and so on, and had demo competitions where we would write stuff like that. And in that period of time, I got to know a lot of other Swedes and people around me that were also interested in this. And that eventually then led me so that when I was 20 years old, I got an offer to for a job at IBM, because I had then a friend who worked there and he knew that I knew a thing or two about computers. So I started, so I didn't go to university at all. So I started at IBM instead. And that wasn't really development. That was just installing and configuring Unix machines or AIX machines, RS-6000. But that was the first stepping stone into actually working with IT and computers. So after 2 years at IBM, I got an offer to do a development job, and then I started doing development full time. And then since then, it's been development.
Got it. All right. So everyone, we're going to start, but like, okay, what problem? The big question, everyone, what problem were you trying to solve with Curl? And I'm going to give you my background on Curl. Okay. First time I ever used Curl was 99, I think. And I was troubleshooting some connectivity for, like, it was an external website or something of that ilk. And so I'm like, oh, there's libcurl and you can, you know, do curl, and it was fine. And I was like, this is really cool. And then literally from that part of my career all the way to now, it was like, oh, I'm testing APIs, use curl K, or we're using Kubernetes now, curl, you know what I'm saying? So rest that, you know, all these things and be able to like test all those endpoints. And I'm just like, man, I can't believe I'm talking to you, dude. I mean, that's just the bottom line. So I want to know the problem you were trying to solve with curl.
Right. But I also think, I mean, looking back at the journey, sort of from where I started and from where now, I, of course, had no idea about where we were going, or even where, you know, where the internet or REST APIs and everything, what everything that was going. So it was more of a, I was in the right time and did the right thing, and then everything happened sort of in the right direction. So I could just surf on that wave, and everything grew from that. But okay, back in 90, back actually, it actually started before curl, because when I started the project initially, the first code I wrote that was an actual HTTP client, it was called HTTP GET, and that was very late 1996. And at that time, I just wanted to download currency rates from a website, because I was doing a currency translation service.
But you were doing it on IRC. I mean, you know what I'm saying? Like from what I read, right? So
yes. Yeah. So I was writing a bot for IRC. So I had a little bot in the channel. So you could ask the bot, how much is Japanese yen in dollars today? Or, you know, 400 yens or whatever currency. Of course, I wanted to have as many currencies as possible. So I found one on HTTP. I just needed a little tool that would download those rates, you know, once per day or twice per day or whatever. That's how I started. And then after a while, I realized that, wait a minute, there are also sites hosting currency rates over Gopher. So I just need to adjust it to speak Gopher as well. So I added Gopher support. And then it just took a short while. And then I realized that, oh, they also have currency rates on FTP sites. So I had to add support for FTP so that my currency service would have a lot of currencies to offer in that IRC channel. Of course, at some point I started to, you know, currency rates. It wasn't that fun anymore. I was more focusing on curl then, because I actually also then added support for FTP upload. And then all the former names I had used for the tool were silly. So I renamed it curl in 1998, because then it could do both downloads of those three protocols and it could do uploads of, well, actually could do upload of HTTP and FTP.
The parallels there, again, I worked for an investment software then, that 99, you know, to 2012 timeframe, right? And so we were using it to also validate FTP sites that were downloading like transactions, positions, and all of those fun things. And so using, you know, curl, I was like, they're like, oh, you know, just, I was like, just use curl. And you know, everyone was like, this is the way to do it. And it literally curl is the most infectious thing in the world. It literally, like, within a minute, everyone's like, oh, this is it. This is exactly how I test any type of endpoint, you know, to get, like you said, FTP, HTTP, all those types of things. Sorry to interrupt you. Go ahead.
No, but it was like
I'm a fanboy, dude. This is like a big moment for me, dude. I want you to know that. So go ahead.
Yeah. But so that was how it started back in then in 1998. It was a fairly small thing. I mean, it's not super big now either, but compared to now, it was very, very small. So I started when I released the first version of curl 1998 in March. It was, I think I had about 2,400 lines of code. And today it's 170,000. So it's grown substantially since then. But then, of course, it did a few things, a few protocols. And then I started to collect some users, and people started to use it, and I added features, people reported bugs, and we, you know, snowballed on. In the year 2000, in the summer of 2000, I converted the core of curl into libcurl, a library then, so that I would be able to sort of hand over the powers to other applications, to allow applications to use, to download stuff as well. And that was a good move, because it then allowed others to also get internet transfer capabilities easily. And one of those early adopters of that was PHP, the language. And that helped, it helped a lot of users then started to use libcurl. And, you know, I got bug reports and even more feature requests. And so no, it kept on growing and growing. And we added stuff, and a lot of people started to use it and started to contribute and so on.
Can we talk about that a little bit? Because again, it takes a special kind of person to take your baby, right? And basically be like, your world, do whatever you want with it. Can you talk about that thought process? Like, just look, I know it's just to enhance so more people can have eyes and create more, but give me that kind of, hey, I'm giving this lib out for anybody to do things. What's that thought process?
For me, it was, I already, well, years before I did curl, I already knew about the concept of giving away source code or downloading source code, building the tool and running it. The name open source was coined in 1990, actually just a month before they released curl. So we could sort of go hand in hand, the concept of open source. But even before it was called open source, the concept existed, right? So before that, so I always liked that idea that you could get code and you could use it and improve it and help, you know, as a collective, help out to make things better. And I thought when I created curl that I would never be able to alone make it a really good thing that would be this good as I want it to be. So I've figured the only way to actually, I mean, conquer the world was to make sure that it would be open to allow everyone to help out so that people would test it, fix it, and send me back the fixes, and we would iterate like that together to make everything better over time. And I didn't really think I would manage by my own. So it was sort of, I sort of didn't even think about doing it in any other way.
So, I mean, let's talk about this. Would you say that curl helped benefit the whole concept of open source? You know what I mean? Because it was one of the, you know, the first couple of things that was open sourced, you know, think of things like FFmpeg and curl and other kind of, you know, open source kind of projects and stuff like that. There has to be mainstay projects for somebody to contribute, like to be the forebearers for this. Would you say that like it helped enable open source to a certain degree?
Of course, I want to believe that I at least helped a little bit, so that I would be honored just of having that considered. But so yes, I think so. And of course, the more users we have and the bigger it gets, the more it's used, the more it gets into the limelight so people can see it. And then also, you know, copy our concepts or build on the idea that we have possibly help people realize and sort of adopt. So yeah, sure, I think so. Even if I don't think we're not only founding fathers to the concept, because it existed a long time before us, and there are many, many projects that are much bigger than us.
What you build and where it takes you shouldn't be limited by your database. CockroachDB helps developers build and scale apps with fewer obstacles, more freedom, and greater efficiency, so you can forget about the database and trust that it just works. Kubernetes-friendly, open source, and indestructible, CockroachDB makes it easier to build and scale apps. It gives companies the freedom to serve customers anywhere, and it's backed by world-class documentation and excellent dedicated support. Discover CockroachDB, the most highly evolved distributed SQL database on the planet. Kubernetes native and built from the ground up to help companies of all sizes, including Bose, Comcast, and Equifax, scale fast, survive anything, and thrive anywhere. Sign up for a free 30-day trial and get a free t-shirt at cockroachlabs.com/popcast. That's cockroachlabs.com/popcast.
Let me ask you this. I'm going to take off your curl hat for a second, put your kind of godfather open source kind of thing hat on, right? Let's talk about this. Do you think people take advantage of open source? Like, I mean, this is a very blanketed question, but like, I see certain projects that like, man, there's people that are building on top of this and they're profiting and they're not giving back. I kind of just give me that blanket statement. And it's basically like, look, like, do you see in the world right now, like where people are taking advantage of open source projects in general?
Yes, I would say that is an easy yes. I think we see that more and more as well, since I think open source as a concept and as amount of projects and amount of code, and actually also as a share of total products is growing in all of those areas. So it's more open source now than ever. And the share of open source in products and devices and tools and code everywhere is larger than ever before. So of course, there's a lot of companies that are standing on shoulders of open source developers, and those open source developers are not always, you know, recognized, compensated, or even, you know, acknowledged that they're actually helped out to that amount, whatever amount it is.
let me ask you this. Is there, what is something that I, you know, you would give somebody who who's trying to open source the, you know, the future of Daniel Stenberg, like out there starting an open source project? What piece of advice would you give that person?
I would say it's really hard because it really depends on what you want to do with open source, because open source is more of a way to do development and provide a source. But if you want to make sure that you earn a lot of money on your open source code, or do you want your open source code to conquer the world, or do you just want to have fun and get an education, or meet people and have like that. So there's a lot of different aspects there. But if, obviously my approach to open source has never been to earn a lot of money, because then in that case I did it wrong. Managed to get it installed in a lot of places. That's a success in that way. But so I'm not sure I'm the best person to give advice in any of that. But of course, depending on what your goal is, you should consider your options and where to go with licenses and how to give things away and so on.
Got it. Let me ask you this, right? So from a curl perspective, what is the one thing on the curl side you were like, wow, we got this right. I love this. The world has taken my baby and made it even better. What was the one you were like, wow, this is cool, they did this? And blanket statement. I'm having you say like one thing. I'm sure there's like a billion PRs. You're like, wow. But you know, anyway.
Yes, but I think in most cases, sort of enhancement that people have done to curl has been in line with curl already. So I can't recall any particular, you know, wow, we could build a tower on top of it that we hadn't thought about before. But mostly it's been about gradually improving it, taking it another notch up and, you know, tightening the bolts even more. So I don't think that there's been any severe, you know, aha moments, you could do that, but more of a cool, great, someone actually did the effort and, you know, spent the energy and time and did all that work and suddenly one day showed up with that cool feature that we all agree that fits perfectly within the project, but nobody has really bothered to do yet. So I think we have a lot of those. Maybe more of a boring answer, but I think actually, because I think people often ask me about, you know, what crazy things have people suggested that for us to adopt, but we haven't had that problem much. But people around in the project and around the project, we're all fairly in agreement what curl is and should be and could be in the future. So, you know, nobody's introducing a game in the code or anything. It's just, you know, tweaking the protocols, doing network transfers just in a different way.
Got it.
Learn how to operationalize Open Policy Agent at scale with Styra. To get started, go to the link at https://hubs.ly/h0pnkm20.
Let me ask you this. What were you thinking? You know, there's that hockey stick growth. What were you think there was? What one element was like, okay, now this is what made, you know, everybody adopt, you know, curl much more, you know, beyond the, you know, the FX kind of foreign exchange, you know, rates you were doing initially. Like, what was that one thing that was like, wow, this, you know, propelled this thing?
Yeah, I don't think we have had a hockey stick growth. So I don't think there was no, for me at least, I've tried to look back and see what was there a particular, you know, fork in the road that we took to the right path and then suddenly everything took off. But I think even there, the more boring answer and more accurate answer is that what makes curl what it is that we're consistent and we're just, you know, iterating on things that, so that is what made it take off, that we could prove that we're reliable, consistent, and just there, and we provide the same feature and the same reliability over and over. So after a few years, you know, when you can look back and you can see that curl has provided this feature for X number of years, we can lean on it, we can rely on it. And 5 years later, you can still do that. And 10 years more years, you can still do that. And I think that is what makes curl, that everyone who uses it, they know that, you know, they can lean on us for doing this. And they know that in the future, we won't break behavior. We won't break APIs. We will still be that library to do transfers as they wanted 10 years ago, 15 years ago. And we will do that in 10 years too. I think that's, you know, that has built more and more users have realized that, and, you know, and they share that with their friends, and everyone else do that as well. So it becomes a more or less of a de facto standard API for doing transfers after a while. So it's just, yeah, it's a really spiraling effect after a while.
Sivo is an alternative to the big hyperscale cloud providers. They've launched the world's first managed Kubernetes service powered exclusively by K3S. With sub-90-second cluster launch times, a simplified Kubernetes experience, and predictable billing, Sivo is on a mission to create a better developer experience. Get $250 free credit to get started. Sign up today at sivocloud.com/podcast. That's civo.com/podcast. Go check them out.
And let me ask you this, because you did say about future, what would you say, what are your aspirational goals with curl? Like, let's say you said 10 years from now, but like, what are the things you're like, hey, I really wanted to go this direction, maybe.
Yeah. I've never been very good at telling the future or for seeing where we're going. So I'm not trying that now either, but what I'm going to try to continue doing is what I've done so far, you know, for 23 years and leading the curl project, is I'm staying with my feet on the ground, you know, and I'm looking at what we're doing now in internet transfers, and I'm making sure that curl remains on sort of the bleeding edge of doing internet transfers. And I'm looking at how do we do internet transfers in general, you know, what are the browsers doing now, what are they going to do in the next year or so, and I try to make sure that we keep up with that in the curl project and keep up with how protocols evolve, you know, new versions of HTTP3, and we can do new versions of TLS. And if anyone suggests a new way to do things that everyone should adopt, we want to be there. So that's where I want curl to remain. And that's how I see us going forward. So there's no, you know, crazy visions or blue sky things that I anticipate that we're going to do in 5 years. No, I think, you know, keeping the course steady towards that light in the end. And then we'll see what happens. Maybe something groundbreaking happens next year. Then we'll just, you know, adapt to that and make sure that curl adapts and works with that, whatever it is.
I just need to stop doing curl-k so I can make it more secure. That's kind of my thing. See, a little joke. See, I got geek cred. I do it. I got the curl guy to laugh. You see that? Anyway, so Daniel, listen, I want to ask you this. So again, what are we doing now? Like, again, it's, I know you're, you know, still a mainstay from the curl perspective, but you're also at a company called Wolf SSL. Tell us about that.
Yeah. So I worked for Mozilla for 5 years. I worked at the Firefox code base with HTTP and stuff like that, because that's what I think it's fun. So I thought it was great to work on Firefox on those parts. But I got a little bit bored by that, and I left Mozilla. And when I did that, I figured I would try to make sure that I could work more with curl and maybe even do curl full time, because then at that time I had been working on curl for 21 years or whatever. And I figured it was about time for me to actually try to do it full time. And to be able to do that, I need someone to pay me to work on curl, right? And how do I do that? I figured I would start selling support and help companies use curl, because there's a lot of companies using curl and not all of them can do it and not all of them want to do it. And I wanted to try that as a way to earn my paycheck. And then I talked to my friends at Wolf SSL, who I've known for many years before this. And they have pretty much the same business idea already, but for their own set of libraries. They have a bunch of mostly TLS and encryption related libraries that they provide support for companies and sell relicensed versions and so on. So it was a match in that regard that they already did this. They had a business for it set up. They have a staffing for it. So I joined them and we started selling curl support under the WolfSSL umbrella then. So now I try to get companies to pay WolfSSL for curl support contracts so that we help them with features, bugs, porting services.
Teleport allows engineers and security professionals to unify access for SSH servers, Kubernetes clusters, web applications, and databases across all environments. You can download Teleport right now at goteleport.com. That's GOTELEPORT.com.
Very cool. Very cool. So, Dan, I'm going to ask my last question. And again, legend that you are. And I, again, I'm so proud and happy to have you on the podcast. This has been amazing, but I'm going to ask you the last question. What work are you most proud of?
Oh, I think it's hard to single out a particular piece. I think I'm just very proud of having brought curl to this point, right? And like, for example, just a few months ago, one month ago, when NASA announced that they're actually using curl in the, you know, the helicopter on Mars project. And I'm not sure that helicopter on Mars is the one I'm most proud of, but I'm very proud of have made a project sort of this much out of my own efforts that had actually taken it to that level and maturity and acceptance. And that's super cool.
This has been incredible. I thank you so, so much from the bottom of my heart for joining the show. Again, you're a legend. I'm a big supporter of you, you know, forever. And everyone, if you don't use, you know, you use curl. Who doesn't use curl, right? So big props. Thank you so much for being on the show, Daniel. I appreciate it.
Thank you.